As Donald Trump's legal problems continue to mount, he's expected to make his first court appearance Thursday on the newest federal charges concerning a plot to reverse the 2020 election.
It's just stunning if we take a step back and we think of the fact that a former president is being charged with trying to undo the will of the people.
Plus, the far-reaching consequences on the world's food supply as Russia continues to attack Ukrainian ports.
Just since the end of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, strikes carried out by Russia have destroyed 180,000 tons of grain inside Ukraine, including 40,000 tons of grain just in the past 24 hours.
And how artificial intelligence is changing how African wildlife reserves prevent poaching. Today is Thursday, August 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is to appear in court Thursday after a grand jury in Washington accused him of illegally trying to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Washington.
A third indictment for former President Donald Trump, this time in Washington, for illegally trying to overturn his 2020 election defeat. Efforts that prosecutors say inspired many of his supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Jack Smith is the special counsel for the U.S. Department of Justice.
The attack on our nation's Capitol on January 6, 2021 was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant.
Trump will be arraigned in court Thursday in Washington, where a grand jury of American citizens indicted the former president as part of a Justice Department investigation. The four-count indictment accuses Trump of conspiracy to violate Americans' right to vote, conspiracy to defraud the government, obstructing an official proceeding, and conspiring to obstruct an official proceeding. The nation's top law enforcement official, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland.
Mr. Smith and his team of experienced, principled career agents and prosecutors have followed the facts and the law wherever they lead.
Trump, currently the frontrunner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, released a statement from his campaign describing the charges as persecutions of President Trump reminiscent of Nazi Germany and the former Soviet Union. Rudy Giuliani is a former attorney for Trump.
What they did here is an abomination that will live in history as one of the worst violations of free speech ever.
But one analyst said the charges are related to Trump's actions, encouraging his followers to storm the U.S. Capitol. Cheryl Bader is the associate professor of law at Fordham University School of Law.
We have a First Amendment right to be protected in our speech, and particularly political speech is afforded the highest degree of protection. But the indictment shows that Trump was not just lying about election fraud, but he used those lies in order to try to subvert the will of the people and to actually overturn the results of a lawful election.
Lawmakers who served on the January 6th committee investigating Trump's involvement said a fair trial will demonstrate the United States' commitment to the rule of law. And some American voters say the charges are overdue. Voter Jordan Tellez is a resident of New York City.
I think it's an embarrassment for the country. I mean, that's a former president. He was just indicted on election fraud. It's pretty embarrassing, isn't it?
Trump accused prosecutors of timing the charges to distract attention from the ongoing legal troubles of Hunter Biden, the son of his anticipated 2024 election rival, President Joe Biden. Meanwhile, Trump has also been indicted on unrelated charges in New York and Florida involving the mishandling of classified documents and campaign fraud, and could face even more charges in Georgia in relation to 2020 election fraud. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
And I spoke with Michael Sozan, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, for his reaction to the historic nature of the latest charges against the former president.
This is a pretty momentous day for democracy, for the rule of law, and a brand new chapter in American history. There is no former president president who has been indicted on federal charges, let alone federal charges that at the root of them are about trying to overturn a valid presidential election, trying to stop the peaceful transition of power, which, as we know, is a bedrock principle of our democracy. Our democracy can only function if there is peaceful transition of power based on how people vote. And the election results in 2020 were valid election results. It's just stunning if we take a step back and we think of the fact that a former president is being charged with trying to undo the will of the people. So this is a really important day in history, not a day that I think should be celebrated necessarily. It's a somber day. And now we'll move forward towards a trial on these charges.
And speaking of the charges, was there anything that really stood out to you or that either you weren't expecting or that you felt were particularly significant?
I was expecting the charges that were related to the conspiracy that Donald Trump was leading to defraud the United States and to obstruct the official proceeding, which was the joint session of Congress where they were counting the votes, the electoral votes, and they were going to certify the election winner. A lot of those charges arose out of facts that the January 6th committee had discussed in detail, and they were part of the criminal referrals that the committee made to the Department of Justice. So in some way, I wasn't surprised by those. Those rest on very plain facts, really. One of the four charges, though, that I was more surprised about was the charge related to conspiracy to deprive people of rights. And that charge seems to be getting at the fact that Americans have a right to an honest counting of votes. And so Donald Trump was involved in a conspiracy, really, to deprive them of their ability to have their vote counted. That's the allegation, at least in that last count.
Former President Donald Trump has continued up until this point to continue to say that the election was rigged and this is a political witch hunt.
I think that will continue to be his defense in the court of public opinion, that this is a witch hunt, that this is a big conspiracy amongst government officials and his political rivals to try to take him down so that he cannot win the presidency again. I don't know how he will defend himself in court. We should all remember he's presumed innocent until he's found guilty. He's going to have his day in court on these charges, as well as in other criminal proceedings that are already underway on other charges. So it remains to be seen exactly what his defense will be. I presume that he might want to present a more factual-based defense that will really address some of the specific charges and the specific allegations. But we don't know. What we can predict is that he will likely continue to say that this is all part of a big conspiratorial witch hunt against him.
Michael Sozan, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Russia attacked Ukraine's main inland port across the Danube River from Romania on Wednesday, sending global food prices higher as it ramped up its use of force to prevent Ukraine from exporting grain. The drone attacks destroyed buildings in the port of Izmail and halted ships as they prepared to arrive and load Ukrainian grain in defiance of a de facto blockade Russia reimposed in mid-July. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller on Wednesday noted the spiraling impacts of these assaults.
We saw President Putin last week in what was a clear propaganda move announce that he would send, 25 to 50,000 tons of grain to African countries. Well, just since the end of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, strikes carried out by Russia have destroyed 180,000 tons of grain inside Ukraine, including 40,000 tons of grain just in the past 24 hours. So we have seen Russia, if anything, turn up its attacks so that they are not just targeting people inside Ukraine, but in fact the whole world. Because when they target grain infrastructure, when they target shipping infrastructure, when they destroy grain, as they have in the past few weeks, they aren't just harming Ukraine, they're harming all the countries around the world, including most particularly developing countries who depend on those exports for survival.
And asked by reporters about the goal of peace talks this weekend in Saudi Arabia.
We are not looking at these talks as generating any concrete deliverables at the end of them. The point of these talks is to continue the conversation with countries around the world about how we obtain a just and lasting peace at the end of this war. So officials from the United States will be traveling to attend these talks, including officials from the State Department. I'll make more announcements about that in the coming days. And we will be engaging these talks, which again were called by the government of Ukraine, to talk about how at the end of this conflict, we can secure a peace that respects Ukraine's territory, a territorial integrity, and Ukraine's sovereignty. And so from our perspective, it is a chance for a number of countries around the world who can attend these talks to hear directly from the Ukrainian government about the horrors their country has suffered at the hands of Russian aggression and how that aggression should not be rewarded at the end of this war.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will chair a U.N. Security Council meeting Thursday on famine and global food insecurity because of conflict. The self-declared new leader of Niger on Wednesday said the junta would not bow to pressure to reinstate ousted President Mohamed Bazoum, intensifying a standoff with the West African bloc that has threatened to intervene after last week's coup. Bloc leaders are hoping to find a peaceful solution to the crisis. Rachel Faber with Reuters produced this report.
The Economic Community of West African States sent a delegation to Niger on Wednesday to negotiate with the military coup leaders who seized power last week. Meanwhile, regional defense chiefs started a two-day meeting in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Abdel Fattah Moussa, ECOWAS's Commissioner for Political Affairs, Peace and Security.
We can avoid a peaceful resolution of constitutional law in the country. So that is our preferred option. But we have to prepare for all eventualities. And, Excellencies, you are here for the final eventuality, the last resort. That is planning for a possible intervention to restore constitutional order.
ECOWAS has imposed sanctions on Niger and threatened to authorize the use of force if the coup leaders do not reinstate President Mohamed Bazoum by Sunday. The West African regional bloc has struggled to contain a democratic backslide in the region and had vowed that coups would no longer be tolerated after recent takeovers in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea. Mali and Burkina Faso have said that any military intervention in Niger would be considered a declaration of war against them too. ECOWAS has taken its hardest line yet on Niger, closing borders with the country, banning commercial flights, halting financial transactions, and cutting power supply. Niger is a key Western ally in the fight against Islamist insurgents, and the coup has been condemned by foreign powers who fear it could allow the militants to gain ground. Britain's Foreign Secretary James Cleverly met with Nigerian President Bola Tinubu in Abuja on Wednesday.
I made the point that the UK very much welcomes ECOWAS's and his indeed decisive action, his strong commitment to democracy, and the unambiguous message that violence is not the means to bring political change in any circumstance, and that the commitment to democracy in Nigeria and in the region is unwavering. This very much supports the UK's position.
That report produced by Rachel Faber with Reuters. Here are some of the other stories we are following from around the world. A federal jury Wednesday recommended a death sentence for the gunman who in 2018 stormed a synagogue in the heart of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's Jewish community and killed 11 worshipers in the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in U.S. history. In a new report issued Wednesday, scientists say climate change made July hotter for 4 out of 5 people on Earth. More than 6.5 billion people, or 81% of the world's population, sweated through at least one day where climate change had a significant effect on the average daily temperature. And Colombia's government and the National Liberation Army rebels are set to begin a 6-month ceasefire amid peace talks to end the guerrilla group's part in 60 years of war. President Gustavo Petro will speak in an event with peace negotiators from both sides. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers have reanimated a worm-like creature that has laid frozen and dormant for thousands of years. Some people may react in horror to this news as they have with Frankenstein, the Mary Shelley book that Universal Pictures transformed into the classic 1931 film. Scientists from the People's Friendship University of Russia and Germany's Max Planck Institute of Molecular Cell Biology and Genetics led a study that details how they resurrected an inactive soil nematode that was buried 40 meters deep in the icy Siberian permafrost. test. The scientists say in their study, published in the journal PLOS Genetics, that the creature had been frozen for 46 to 48,000 years. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. The Biden administration has recently been emphasizing the strength of the U.S. economy, but some small business owners remain skeptical. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias visited their shops to hear more about their economic struggles ahead of the election season.
U.S. President Joe Biden toured several states to promote his economic plan and highlight his administration's achievements, including the creation of over 13 million new jobs since he was elected.
Inflation is now at its lowest point in 2 years, and wages are up after being adjusted for inflation.
But some small businesses in the Cleveland Park neighborhood of Washington are struggling to make ends meet. Food prices are just too high, says Martha Bustos, manager of the Tex-Mex restaurant Laredo.
We maintain the same prices and have to raise wages, so in the end, us merchants are left with almost nothing.
Liz Winchell owns a paint-your-own pottery studio in the heart of Washington. She says she's seen zero economic improvement under the Biden administration.
The cost of rent and the cost of payroll, which are two things that are not something I can control, are very high.
While fully supporting President Biden's economic policies, liquor store manager Anthony Quinn admits his business is also struggling, but he blames it on factors like climate change and the pandemic.
Because we've probably lost 80% of our business with COVID. 80%, maybe 85, maybe 90.
Jay Morris sells and repairs vacuums and sewing machines. He's also seen less traffic at his store, which he attributes to a change in consumer habits.
Everything costs more. We used to see people come in and just say, oh, I need this, I need that, and I'll just take that. Now they're more careful.
And as for what issue they'll prioritize when casting their votes in the 2024 presidential election, Liz Winchell.
It is the U.S. economy.
Jay Morris.
The economy is right up there, but I want a president that's going to be fair to all people, and I like the way Biden feels on that.
Anthony Quinn.
I'm personally going to vote for Biden again. He's enabled people to be able to come in here and actually afford to buy something.
Martha Bustos.
May the best win. We'll vote for the best one.
And that, in her words, would be the candidate who supports small businesses to the fullest extent. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Pope Francis met with survivors of clergy sexual abuse in Portugal Wednesday and blasted members of the country's Catholic hierarchy for the response to the long-ignored scandal. Francis dove head-on into the crisis, roiling the Portuguese church on the first of a five-day visit to Lisbon for the Catholic Church's World Youth Day Festival. As Associated Press correspondent Walter Ratcliffe reports, Francis also plans to promote peace.
Pope Francis is challenging Europe to retake its role as peacemaker and bridge builder. He made the comments as he arrived in Portugal to open World Youth Day. More than 1 million young people from around the world are expected to attend the gathering, which culminates with a papal mass on Sunday. Francis vowed to continue urging young people to make a mess. It was a reference to his now famous exhortation at his first World Youth Day in Rio de Janeiro in 2013. It's a call for young people to shake things up in their parishes. Citing Russia's war in Ukraine, global warming, and Europe's demographic decline, he urged young people in particular to take up the mantle to build a future together. I'm Walter Ratliff.
And artificial intelligence is changing how wildlife preserves prevent poaching, with smart cameras, drones, and other technology helping rangers protect endangered species. Kate Bartlett reports from Limpopo, South Africa.
The potential pitfalls of artificial intelligence have sparked concern recently.
But there's one area where advances in technology are proving beneficial. Wildlife rangers in South Africa say machine learning is helping them fight the poaching of rhinos and other endangered species. Tim Finn is operations manager of the anti-poaching unit at the Lapalala Wilderness Reserve.
Well, it's changed a lot. I mean, we've gone from just guys on the ground and a couple of guys on hilltops with binoculars to top of the range things such as thermal cameras, thermal binoculars, drone systems, license recognition cameras on the roads.
Technology hasn't replaced old-fashioned boots on the ground, however. It's just being used in conjunction with them. Glenn Phillips is CEO of the Lapalala Wilderness Foundation.
Foot patrols picking up tracks. That's manpower, in other words, vehicles. And then, of course, a canine unit to do follow-ups if there is a incident reported.
One of the systems Lapalala and many other reserves in Africa use is Earth Ranger, which was developed by a US company set up by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen and is free of charge. Jez Lefcourt is Earth Ranger's director.
Earth Ranger is a software platform that integrates with many, many, many different sources of data. So that's actually over 100 different sources now. And those sources include things like the radios that rangers are carrying so that we can track their location, and vehicle tracking devices, aircraft tracking, camera traps, acoustic sensors, remote imagery.
The artificial intelligence aspect of Earth Ranger learns to recognize if the figures seen on camera are human, vehicle, or animal. If it's a human, the system alerts rangers in the operations room. They then determine if there's a need to take any action. And so-called tech for good products are constantly evolving. Dutch startup Hack the Planet recently developed AI-powered wildlife cameras that can detect poachers in real time. Previously, the camera traps, as they called, had a major flaw. Tim van Dersen is a software engineer at Hack the Planet.
You have to go back to the camera to collect the SD card, and then you know what's on the SD card. So for instance, you go back there every 3 to 6 months, and then for instance, you know that there's a poacher 3 months ago. But we made these cameras smart, so you know immediately that there's a poacher in your park in real time.
Such technological innovation can only be helpful for animals like rhinos, elephants, or the rescued pangolin, an African anteater that's the most trafficked mammal in the world. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Lapalala Wilderness Reserve, Limpopo, South Africa.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This year marks the 25th anniversary of the original signing of the International Religious Freedom Act, noted Ambassador-at-Large for Religious Freedom Rashad Hussein in recent congressional testimony.
25 years of protecting a human right that is fundamental to the history of the United States, integral to our national identity and governance as expressed in the First Amendment, and a core component of our foreign policy.
The International Religious Freedom Office at the State Department works to protect and defend religious freedom around the world, including persecuted Christians in China, said Ambassador Hussein.
This year, the International Religious Freedom Office worked extensively with the Shenzhen Holy Reformed Church to protect their members' right to freedom of religion or belief in the face of relentless pressure from the Chinese Communist Party, even after they fled China.
In recent years, house churches have come under heavy pressure by Chinese communist authorities, with many prominent ones shut down. Founded in 2012, the Shenzhen Church was not an officially registered church and therefore illegal. According to rights groups, members were harassed by government authorities and church meetings were frequently raided by police. Authorities also threatened to shut down an underground religious school they operated. As pressure continued to build, the congregation voted to leave China, with many members departing between late 2019 and early 2020. The Shenzhen Church started its journey to freedom by first fleeing to the South Korean island of Jeju. With limited hope for gaining asylum, church members fled again, this time to Thailand. Fearing a forcible return to China after being arrested for visa overstays in Thailand, rights groups, non-governmental organizations, and the Office for Religious Freedom advocated for the release of the Chinese Christians, explained Ambassador Hussein.
As a result of our efforts in the IRF office and broader department efforts in coordination with Congress and other U.S. government agencies and NGOs, I was honored to welcome members of this church as they arrived to the United States at DFW Airport and was pleased that they celebrated Easter at a Texas church in safety.
We stand united as Americans, declared Ambassador Hussein, for the sake of those who suffer due to their religion or beliefs.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.